Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Post Political Podcast. I'm the host, Derek Britton, and I'm excited to have y'all with me tonight. So this is one of the last three episodes of season one. I'm going to be taking a little break this summer to hang out with the family and kind of just take a breather and then come back in after the summer, kind of in like the end of July, early August time frame. But this is one of the last three episodes for the season. I'm super excited that we got started. We got rolling really well and had a lot of folks join in and listen to the show and give some good feedback on the show. So I'm going to try and take some of that and bring it into this next season that we do. So tonight we have an awesome guest, my good friend JC. But before that, let's do the promo. So first up, we have the Vermin Supreme Institute. Our purpose is to inspire social evolution through the disruption of authoritarianism, to promote compassionate activism, and to spread the knowledge of redacted history. Through the use of humor, direct action, and mutual aid, we uplift the disaffected, the disenfranchised, and the disempowered. And thank you all again to whoever helped out with the Love in Action fundraiser. It was a great fundraiser. You can check out more information about how that went at the Vermin Supreme Institute, or just verminsupremeinstitute.com. And yeah, check out the stories up on there. There's a bunch of stories being posted kind of every week, so check out for new content as well. And next up, we have the two different promos we're doing on the store. So if you go to postpoliticalpodcast.com/shop, you can find both the Be Gay, Do Crime and the Bridge Kids Get Back fundraiser. So Be Gay, Do Crime, these little articles here, or the direct link to the PayPal, you can basically go and donate. And 100% of the proceeds from any of the merch sales goes right to the Trans Resource Network of Louisiana. And they're helping with the trans and gender nonconforming folks down in New Orleans. So that's a great group doing a lot of great things. So definitely check them out. Also, we have the Bridge Kids Give Back fundraiser. So 100% of the proceeds goes to Bridge Kids Give Back. They're in Massachusetts. They're a group committed to feeding, clothing, and uplifting one houseless or unhoused community at a time. And check out again what they do on Facebook. You can directly link here to their PayPal to donate. And like I said, check them both out. They're both incredible mutual aid groups that do a lot of good for their communities. So pumped to help them out. I want to finish season one, you know, strong with some donations for them. So if you can go on the store or go directly and donate to them directly and help them out, that'd be great. So now we have JC Cook. So JC is a political activist who works with Vermin Supreme, the Vermin Supreme Institute. He's also one of the hosts of the Let This Podcast Run Your Life, and is currently running for the mayor of Athens in Texas. So we're going to be talking about a little bit of that and some of the Vermin Supreme stuff. We're going to be talking about a bunch of different stuff. Let's just bring them on and get the party started. How's it going, man?
Who, me? Yes, me. Couldn't be. Then who? I'm doing all right, man. Thank you for having me on the show. I love the show. Long-time listener, first-time caller, as they say in the trades. I'm proud of you, man. You've done a good job. Wrapping up season one, and honestly, I've seen that family of yours, and if they were my family, I'd be taking a little time off too. I mean,
yeah, that'd be good. We're playing a lot of hikes. I just got one of the little hiking backpacks so you can put the baby in the back, and she's going to be able to come around and go and see a bunch of. We live up in New England where there's a ton of mountains all around us, and we can go kind of hiking every day. So
that's beautiful.
Yeah, it's going to be great. I'm super pumped to have you on. I mean, it's funny. I started this end of last year or whatever, and I've kind of wrapped up season one with all my friends. Like, a lot of the Vermin Supreme folks are coming on, and a lot of the folks that I get to work with all the time. So I'm super happy to have you.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it. And you definitely could have worse people on. Present company excluded, of course. Couldn't do better.
Thanks, man.
Of course.
So if you, I want to start off kind of how I start a lot of the shows, but, you know, it's a fun way, I think, to learn a little bit about, where you stand in the third party stuff and also kind of what your journey was to get here and just to learn, you know, I guess what brought you to third parties and what kind of, got you started down, I guess, this path versus kind of the duopoly.
Oh, sure. Well, that's, that's not a problem. It's a story I tell a lot. So I grew up, a child of divorce. You don't have to pity me, but it's a fact, and I need to share it so that you can understand that my family is pretty well split right down the middle. My dad's side of the family are Republicans, And my mom's side of the family, for the most part, with some exceptions, you know what I'm talking about out there, they were Democrats. And I remember we had the little mock election in primary school, and I voted for Bill Clinton because that's what you do when your parents vote for Bill Clinton. You vote for Bill Clinton. And looking back on that, I'm ashamed of myself. So ashamed. But, you know, I'll work that out in therapy. So I grew up a Democrat. When I started paying attention to politics was roughly, other than watching the news in the mornings, which is something we did in our household, I started paying attention right around the time that September 11th happened. I was a sophomore in high school. And I remember being in, I believe it was a government class or, I don't know, some form of social study. When all that happened, and I opposed the war in high school. Now, I didn't really understand all of the reasons, but I knew that we didn't need to go to war, and we did anyway, and with the wrong country. But I digress. I was very adamantly against the war all through Bush's two terms, yep. And all of a sudden, there was this new fresh face on the block. I voted for John Kerry first, and that was boy, he's in the news lately, isn't he? Yeah. So I voted for him, and I didn't understand, you know, how he could lose because he was an anti-war guy, and you know, he was, you know, two glasses of water shy of a real person. So then Obama comes on the scene, and I was energized. I was excited. Here's a guy. He's going to end the wars for me. You know, he's going to, you know, be peaceful. He promised to close Guantanamo Bay, which was a big thing for me because I'm also vehemently against torture. And he got elected, and then all of a sudden, the wars continued. And not only did they continue, they expanded to a total of 7 countries. And I looked around and I noticed that all of my friends that were anti-war through 8 years of George Bush had all of a sudden disappeared from the anti-war movement, at least in my area, which isn't much of a movement. There are bowel movements bigger than the than the anti-war movement in part of East Texas where I live. But anyway, so I had people telling me things like when I asked questions about why are we still over there? You know, we were promised that this would be the end of all this nonsense. And people started telling me that I just didn't understand foreign policy. And I was like, that's funny because for 8 years, I really thought I had. So that sort of made me politically agnostic. And I didn't really pay attention for a few years, you know, focused on keeping the rent paid and eating and, you know, those trivial things that people think about sometimes. Yeah. And then I was introduced to, and let me just preface this with, I got better. I was introduced to Ron Paul. And the thing I liked about Ron Paul was that he was against war. And that was my primary issue back then. And so Ron Paul, I watched him get screwed over by the Republican Party in the 2012 primary. Yeah, that's what it was. Because I had heard of Ron Paul in 2008, and I liked that he was anti-war. But obviously, you don't vote for Republicans in the Democratic household, so I had voted for Obama. But getting behind myself, he introduced me to the concept of libertarianism, which I'd never heard of before, and when he got screwed over, I decided, without knowing anything about him, that I would vote for Gary Johnson. So I voted for him in 2012. And as things progressed and Obama was finishing his second term, I had moved back to the small town where I grew up in East Texas because financially I took a nosedive, full disclosure. And that was when I saw that there was a Henderson County Libertarian Party Facebook page, because I had just gotten back on Facebook. And no sooner had I pressed that like button that I had a message from a lady by the name of Desiree Lindsay. And Desiree Lindsay reached out to me and said, oh, my God, are you a libertarian? And I was like, I guess I am. I think I am. I voted for a libertarian last time. And she reached out to me and invited me to, I believe it was a barbecue. And I remember that day because I showed up and it was just a couple of people there. And then the next meeting that we went to, it rained. And it rained the whole thing out. But it was still a nice day. Nice to meet these people. And when I came in to the party, I was such a constitutionalist. And it's hard for me to say now for where I am. But I was big into this idea that all we have to do is just get Gary Johnson elected and the whole world is going to change. Whole world. Think about that. It's pretty crazy, right?
It's funny, like, as you're going through a lot of this was very similar to what I, you know, I don't mean to interrupt, but like I went through I was super anti-war, voted for Obama because of it, felt completely duped, moved on to Gary Johnson, knowing a little bit, but not a whole lot, and kind of felt the same way. Gary Johnson gets elected, the world goes, all the wars end immediately, the world goes back to peace and prosperity and all this stuff. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of the things I actually like about you a lot is that we do come from very similar backgrounds, whereas, you know, a lot of people in the Libertarian Party came there from the Republican Party.
Yep.
Which, you know, they got here. That's what matters.
Yeah.
I'm not any better having come from the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
We've got, but so after in 2016, my friends, Dez and Tyler Lindsay, would talk to me about anarchy because they were anarchists. And I was like, oh, that sounds a little crazy for me. You know, what we really need are incremental reforms that as soon as the next guy takes over can completely erase and go back to normal. So I was all gung-ho for Johnson and Weld. And then I believe it was 1 week before the election, Bill Weld went on national television, and he walked out there and he said, the first things out of his mouth were, well, I'm just here to vouch for Mrs. Clinton. And I was like, you're what? You're here to vouch for Mrs. Clinton? That's weird, because I thought that we were raising money for Johnson and Weld, not for Hillary Clinton. And that was the moment when I said to myself, that's it. I'm done. I'm done with electoral politics. I don't care. And then after the election, and this is going to be a very polarizing fact, but Nick Sarwark made a statement the day after the election. He came out and he said those famous words that even still thinking about them, I get chills. I get chills in my arms because that's how powerful it was. He came out and he said, well, you know what I say? Your tears are delicious and your parties will die. And that lit a fire in my gut. And I said, all right, I'm sticking around, but I'm not going the respectability route because I don't see any difference between these suits and the suits that have been lying to me my whole life.
Right.
So I started looking into, I read No Treason, The Constitution of No Authority by Lysander Spooner, which was my first like anarchist literature that I ever read. And, you know, he came at anarchy from, he attacked the Constitution from a contractual basis, like legality. And I thought that was an interesting take. Yeah. Then I started working a little bit with James Weeks and a few other people in the Libertarian Party Audacious Caucus back in the day. And James kept telling me over and over and over again, read the bread book. Please read the bread book. And finally, one night, I was working overnights at a hotel in downtown Dallas, and there was nothing going on. So I plugged my phone into an external battery, and I listened to the entire Conquest of Bread by Peter Kropotkin. And it touched me. It really touched me because, you know, I'd always, since I had been in the Libertarian Party, I had looked at liberty through an economic lens. And when I read The Conquest of Bread, it reminded me that of like the emotional appeal that made me, you know, that made me identify with the Democratic Party. And all of that was gone. So I realized that I could have that back. That made me very happy. And so I started just consuming anarchist literature. I read a collection of Voltairine de Cleyre's work, which he is absolutely one of my favorites. I read Mutual Aid. I picked up What is Property by Proudhon, and just got hooked. And I drifted into that horrible realm of left libertarianism, libertarian socialism, anarchism, and never looked back. I love it. Now, that's not to cast any aspersions against my good right libertarian friends, because some of the best people and most caring and kind people that I know are right libertarians. Just for the record, I want to throw that out there, because I love you people. You people taught me, you gave me a home, and I appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You know, I have the same impression. You know, I kind of came in really on a lot of the social part of it and kind of the emotional part of it, as you kind of touched on. But I learned a lot more about some of the economic pieces of it as well. And I swung not all the way to the right, but fairly far into the right quadrant. And I kind of have swung back into very, you know, libertarian centrist, I guess, or kind of mutualist, you know, but or more anarchist without that's kind of the place I've kind of landed, because it just gets too much to try and explain, you know, all the nuances and stuff. But I agree. I think it's wonderful to see a lot of folks coming at problems from different directions, and also being able to do so with their full heart, no matter where they kind of fall along. I feel like the north-south line is more important to me than the east-west line, if you will.
100%. I agree. I'm a big fan, and this is something I've been a proponent of for years in the Libertarian Party, is diversity of tactics. And that's not, like, when I say that I just can't get behind Suits, that doesn't mean that I won't vote for a candidate with good values and good positions in a suit. But I look for something a little off center. I'm a big fan of interesting ways of promoting. If you've seen my campaign videos, then you know that I like to throw a little bit of humor in there, because I find that it's the spoonful of sugar that helps the medicine go down, as they say in the world of corporate Disney. I probably owe them a nickel for springing that out.
Yeah, most likely. Yeah.
Especially since they're the ones that nuked the patent law that had made patents expire, you know, for Mickey Mouse.
Right. That's true. That's very true. Yeah, they're very proudly IP supporters.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But they put the P in IP.
Yeah. And so you touched on a good point about, you know, the videos you've been doing for your candidacy. I went to upload some into the tool here, but it ended up giving me a couple errors. So what I'm going to do is actually link them underneath the show. When I'm done, I'm going to go in and comment, because I think they're wonderful. I've watched and I think I've shared every one of them, because I think they're wonderful.
I know you have, because I get the notifications when they get shared. So confirmed.
So I want to learn a little bit more about it. So I think for the folks who don't know about your campaign, give us like a quick, you know, kind of elevator pitch, I guess, on what you're kind of platforming on, and then some of the things that you want to achieve, and let's break down and go into those a little bit.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. So right off the bat, and I generally don't go for pragmatism, but, you know, I'm dealing with a solid red county, and I went to go vote at the Texan Theater in Athens for early voting last year because of COVID. It just seemed safer to go when other people weren't going to be there.
Yep.
And one thing that I noticed when I went to vote, I got to the county and local election spot, and every single incumbent was running unopposed. And I said to myself, well, that's ridiculous. Like, people don't even run anymore. I understand this is generally a deep red district and county, but you would think that people, just to give people an option, would run. So that was why I decided to throw my hat in the ring. I don't believe that people should ever not have an option when it's possible to have one. My campaign was primarily about decentralization. as a means of bringing people back in, because 90% of the people that live in this city stayed home on election day. So there were 1,236 votes that were cast out of 12,700 people, and less than that picked the winner. It was about 700 some odd votes to 400 some odd votes. And that's sad. And so I decided I would run. And the idea is basically, if I decentralize, I can set up a database, because, you know, in the Libertarian Party, we use SurveyMonkey and different voting apps, especially for the last the digital convention that we had. Right. Those things were essential. So I know it can be done. So the idea is basically just to allow every single person that lives in this city, felons included, by the way, because felons, it turns out, are affected by laws too.
Very much so.
So they would all get an equal and direct democratic vote for every decision that I'd make. Now, in my town, the mayor is only a glorified city council position. They just happen to be the front face of the city. So my vote in that 12,700 plus people would count as a single vote, because I would never try to push any kind of an agenda on the people of this town, because I'm not experienced. This is my first time, and I don't ever want to do anything that's going to negatively impact the people here, because they have a right to autonomy. But if I let them set the agenda, then there's no way that it can fail. And if it does, it's not my fault.
That's true. No, and that's a very radical way of kind of being able to help, I guess, you know, not so much govern the city, but be able to make decisions that benefit the people of the city. I mean, it's you're going to get that kind of, you know, direct. If there's a business owner, let's say, that is in the city, their vote does not count any more than the non-business owner that might be right beside where that business owner wants to put a building. Exactly. And typically, you know, the money plays into it, the power, you know, there's a lot more that goes into those decisions. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, and to people who are anarchists who might be asking themselves, why would an anarchist promote direct democracy? It's because I see it as an important step. The first thing is to rope people into making their own decisions, and then let them realize that, look, we can come together as a community and we can make all these decisions without this bureaucratic nightmare that exists currently. But it's a way to get them in, because if you were to tell people, hey, I want to completely abolish government, immediately people are going to panic.
Yep.
But if you teach people how to govern their own lives through these sort of, decentralized platforms, then they're going to learn soon enough that they can make those decisions responsibly. And, you know, in 12,700 people, I have experts in every field living in this town.
Right.
And I would consult all of those people because they have a say. You know, it's Bakunin had a quote that said, when it comes, he didn't appreciate, this is going to be a terrible paraphrase, but bear with me.
Yeah.
He didn't like authority, but when it came to authority, he left the authority of the boot to the bootmaker and construction to the architect and things like that. But he reserved the right to decline to accept their judgment at any time. But, you know, nobody, you have to be able to bring people in. That's the only way that it can function.
Yeah, no, and to try and get people reengaged. I mean, it sounds like you have a very kind of disenfranchised population of, you know, with that low of a percentage of voters that turn out. And I mean, I've seen it in a ton of. I feel like even where I live in kind of central Massachusetts, it's still fairly active, and even still, it's. I mean, we're in the 20-ish percent. And even lower in some of the local, you know, elections that only have, you know, a handful of city council or anything like that. So, yeah, I think this is a great way to re-engage voters and really try and get people in the community to work in their community, you know, to be re-engaged in their community and want to make their community a better place.
Absolutely. Well, I mean, it's the first step in, like, fixing the world. We have to teach people how to love each other again. And one way to do that is by engaging them in the everyday affairs of the city. it just, it has to happen. Building communities back is the first step, I think, in creating a new society.
I agree. And it's really interesting. I don't want to go too far down this rabbit hole, but I've always found it very interesting. Churches. So I'm not a religious person. I've never right. been. My parents were both religious and brought us up to kind of figure it out on our own and with some guidance and stuff. But I never ended up getting anything to stick, let's say. But I've noticed that you know, those used to be kind of that community center where if someone needed help, someone would reach out and help because they were both members of the same church. And you know, there's some good and some bad to that for sure. But I think to throw the baby out with the bathwater and completely remove that piece of the community without having churches as such a major part of our everyday lives today, I think is wrong. I think, you know, we can learn something that really did work well in building community and building kind of that mutual aid network. It wasn't officially called a mutual aid network, but sure. It really was.
Absolutely. People used to take care of each other. You know, there's a reason that the biggest area in the church where everyone sits is called a sanctuary. Because they used to provide sanctuary to the community from police and from, you know, any sort of thing. And that's just a quick aside. David Miller Kohlmeyer, I just want to give you a shout out because he is a minister with the Unitarian Universalist Church, and they still provide sanctuary. In fact, the one in Austin, Texas, they have a family of immigrants that are living inside the church because ICE, they won't let ICE in. And there should be more of that in this world.
100%. Yeah. It's funny. David and I had a scheduling conflict early on, never could get it, but he's actually, I'm hoping to get him onto season two of the show actually.
Oh, I love it. He's such a joy.
Yeah, it's wonderful. I had some conversations with him before, not to go too far down this route, but you know, having that kind of talk of religion for a non-religious person, and it's funny because he says, you know, that's a lot of his path as well as through atheism, and it's, I think there's a whole different thing that we can kind of talk about there. But yeah, I not getting us too far sidetracked.
Of course,
I think there's something in there.
Oh, and by the way, for religious people who might be watching that wonder how anarchism squares with religion, read Tolstoy. Read What I Believe, My Religion by Leo Tolstoy. I thought it was an incredible read. And as someone who considers themselves pretty well agnostic, it taught me several things about the teachings of Christ that I was not aware of. So good read, and I'll get off of that.
Oh, that's cool. That's good to know. That's a good side thing. But to get back to the kind of the election and kind of the campaign and stuff, you know, I know, and I apologize. I wish I could show one of the videos on live because it would be good to kind of talk about a little bit. But yeah, talk about, I guess, your messaging and how, you know, I think you have two big things in your messaging that I really appreciate. And I know working with Verma Supreme, we both appreciate is both a high focus on compassion and also a little bit of a focus, or not maybe a focus, but in the way that you do it is through comedy and kind of being a little outlandish so that you capture more of an audience. And I so much appreciate that type of messaging. And I guess I want you to talk a little bit about kind of how you come up with, I guess, some of the ideas for those videos and what's your kind of thought process on compassionate messaging and kind of more of that audacious messaging, I guess.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So the first video I did was just an announcement, and that was where I wanted to talk to people about the complete lack of participation that I had witnessed and that we needed to do a better job of that. And that was my whole reasoning for running for mayor. There wasn't a whole lot of comedy in the first video because it was really just about explaining to people. So I did just sort of a little bit more of a straight political ad.
Yep.
And then I, with the second video, then I started sliding into parody a little bit because one of my least favorite things that politicians do in their political ads is to, you know, dress up like a cowboy and here's me getting hay off the back of a truck and I'm on a motorcycle. I'm MJ Hagar. And, you know, they try to tie themselves to the idea that they're a regular people, and most of these people are millionaires.
Yeah,
they're not regular people. but they want to present themselves, because if they present themselves as regular people, they can dupe regular people into voting for them without having to put up any collateral. So the first video I did, or the second video that I did, was about that. I put together a mock-up, like a mock campaign ad, where I did my best Sam Elliott impersonation, and, well, I was born in East Texas, and blah, 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 and just kind of made fun of that. Little did I know, that's kind of the campaigning that my opponent had been doing the whole time. And so I felt really stupid doing that, because I never intended to attack him. But, you know, that's just kind of how things go sometimes. The next video that I did, though, was because I had made fun of the right pretty well in the last one. So the next video I did was making fun of the left, primarily Beto O'Rourke, because I can't stand Beto O'Rourke, because he's a little trust fund baby with a multi-million billionaire father-in-law. He's done some pretty shady stuff in his career. So I photoshopped my face on a picture of him skateboarding in the Whataburger parking lot, because that was his way of showing people he was one of them. So I made fun of that a little bit and used that as a lead-in to talk about police reform, because the George Floyd trial had just happened. We got the verdict right before, like right as I was writing the script, and so I thought we got to work in talking about that, because, you know, it's something that's very important, and I don't think a lot of people are willing to talk about that in their campaign ads, at least not without sugarcoating it. And I just straight up said, I want mandatory body cameras and things like ending broken windows policing, and for police officers to carry personal liability insurance, because I think those are all excellent starting points for where we need to go with policing.
Yeah, and I've had this conversation with a couple. I actually, it was interesting. I actually engaged with a person who had, you know, kind of a back to blue Facebook profile picture. Mm-hmm. And I spoke with them about, you know, these are some of the steps that I think we could take on the way. And yes, I believe at the end of the day, in a society that we don't need a police officer as we see it today. Can be something a little different, but at the end of the day, it would not look anything like it does today. But this is how I think we should get there. And it was, you know, very similar stuff. I think, you know, if you require a surgeon to have insurance, why don't you require a police officer to have that kind of insurance? If they are not good at their job and they keep doing really bad things that hurt people, then they become less insurable and then less hireable. It really becomes a self governing kind of thing, I feel like. So I think that was one of the things, you know, that you brought up, and I think that's such a good idea. Just in general, I think it's a good path to kind of getting to a better place at the end. So,
well, I mean, ultimately, the system of policing that exists now was built on racism,
right?
And it's not to say that every police officer is racist. It's just a historical fact. The police, especially down where I live, they were formed from the runaway slave patrols. And, you know, the only way that policing is going to get better is if we do. Are you familiar with the Ship of Theseus?
No.
So the Ship of Theseus is an idea that you have this boat. So you replace one board, then you replace another board. And eventually, if you replace every board on the ship, is it still the same ship?
Yes. Okay.
Wow. So that's the Ship of Theseus thing. And I think that that's the way that we have to handle policing. The thing has to be dismantled so that we can build something egalitarian to take care of people that actually serves the community. Yep. And I'm not talking about, oh, hey, as soon as I become mayor, I'm firing all you bastards. No, that's not the thing. But I do expect accountability. And I'd like to see community audits of police departments and of the jails, especially the Henderson County Jail here, where I've heard some pretty interesting stories that I'm not going to get into for liability's sake. But I think that treating people with dignity is important. And that's why I also used my video to talk about restorative justice, which I very much believe in. I love the idea of taking the prisons completely out of the picture, especially for nonviolent crime.
Yep.
And giving people an option to sit down with people that have been victimized and have a dialogue. Dialogue is very important. It's how we heal as a people. That's what I feel
like reconnecting with people, if the expectation is to kind of reconnect with the community, society, and eventually become back of part of that society, or you have to have dialogue. Like, that dialogue is incredibly important. Or how do you expect a person to try to reconnect with, you know, the society that they've damned by whatever, you know? And, you know, these are, you know, the laws, I guess, that protect people, not the laws that are just there to, put people in jail, which they have established quite a bit of laws to do so.
The primary goal of policing was never supposed to be fundraising. And yet here we are funding entire departments from stolen money and going and bleeding poor people with citations and all these little things, and then the cash bail system. You know, the problem with authoritarian government is that there are all these little systems and they all feed each other. So the court system feeds the prison system and the police feed the court system. And, you know, it's just, it's so asinine. It's 2021 and we're still doing this nonsense. Can we stop, please? Can we just stop?
And at least talking about the problem, I feel like there's a lot of people not even, you know, admitting that there is an issue and kind of trying to identify ways to, like, there's a lot of cover up from every, you know, kind of all sides. Different people have, and I'm not saying that people are covering, and there are people covering up actual crimes, but I'm saying people are covering up why there's issues. You know, people are trying to defend, well, it's, you know, it's not being born out of racism. The 13th Amendment didn't continuously add to the racism part. The drug war continuously add. If we can just take a look, an honest look at ourselves as a society, as America, or as whatever, and say, look, we screwed up and we need to go back and fix some of these things. We can start there. We can understand why we screwed up, how we screwed up, and start really, you know, digging into the problem. So,
well, and it's important for people to understand, like, look, I grew up in a town of 632 people in rural East Texas. I was raised with some backwards ideas. And that's not to say that my family are bad people, because some of them were raised with some backwards ideas. But, like, it's not hard to change. Like, you realize that everyone has value and that we all deserve the right to autonomy and, like, the same levels of freedom. And, you know, just start doing better. I did it. And if I can do it, then anyone can do it. I've learned to love so many different people from different backgrounds, because we all have the same basic function. You know, we wake up, we eat, we sleep. Sometimes, if we're lucky, we do a little bit of that, you know, and then we go to bed and wake up, do it all over again.
Yeah. And I feel like you've touched on it a couple of times now, even the going back to rebuilding the community, loving people more, you know, that's really, it's great to see a lot of I've had a lot of folks on the show, and a lot of the folks that I've had on that are running, you know, campaigns and stuff have been really talking specifically about compassion, love, and trying to bring back some of that in their town, city, wherever they are. And it's wonderful to hear kind of echoed throughout a few different places. But, you know, it's a good point you also make that, and I want to make sure we capture this, because I think it's easy to overlook, but not having to become the, you know, this perfect person tomorrow, but just getting better every day and kind of working towards the fact that, hey, we're all here on this, you know, spinning rock, trying to do the best we can. Let's be kind to each other day one, and then we'll figure out the rest after that.
Right. I mean, you know, think of a person or a specific group that you at one point have thought lesser of. Now picture yourself stranded upside down in a car in a ditch, and picture a whole bunch of those people coming by, and ask yourself, would I allow these people to help me if I needed help?
Right.
Like, of course you would. And just start from there. Like Bob Dylan has a great song called "She's Only a Pawn in Their Game" about the murder of Medgar Evers and about the manipulation of the white Southerner by politicians to turn them against the black population so that the rich man can keep getting richer while you're busy fighting this person who has even less than you.
Yeah.
That's a fantastic song. You should listen to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you don't have to buy it though. Steal that shit.
That's right. Screw IP.
That's right.
No, I think that's another kind of good point as well. Is like the small, you know, the you don't have to see someone in a turned over car to go and help someone either. Like saying, you know, to have a good day to someone, even, you know, that's rarer today than it was back when I was growing up, I feel like. And I try and do it as much as possible, but I think if more folks could do even just small things like that, I think everyone's day would be a ton better. So
it adds up and it makes you feel better. That's another thing. Like something as simple as just smiling at somebody that you see walking on the street, you know, holding a door for someone, you know, it's not as big an insult as some people might think that it is, you know, grab the door. And just go through the door, Jim. I'm trying to do you a favor. You know?
Exactly.
I don't really know Jim, but just assume that I was holding a door for him and he was not happy about it. But yeah, I think we can all do better and I think we should do better. Like, what's stopping you? If I can do better, you can do better.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And I think there's, you know, it's interesting because, and this is what has driven me more into kind of the Libertarian Party when I've had some, you know, some days where it's like, oh, is this worth it? It's, you know, it's an uphill battle. We're, you know, hitting 1%. And, you know, I know not every battle is the national battle, but it does, you know, kind of wear on you and even inter-party, you know, fighting and things like that. And it's like, man, do I keep on it? But at the end of the day, it's, there is a beauty in just, you can really trace back a lot of the, at least anarchist theories and a lot of libertarian, I guess, party stuff as well, to just allowing every other person to have the same liberty, the same love, the same everything. And that I think is just such a great thing to kind of pull back to. Mm-hmm. Whenever I'm kind of feeling down and you think about, you know, the Democrats and the Republicans, and neither of them have that rooted kind of philosophy or theory, you know, it's more whatever their platform is that year. You've even seen, you know, things go back and forth between the parties as the years have gone on. So I think that great thing that kind of ties us all together.
Well, it is. Humanity is a beautiful thing if you let it.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, you might be surprised. You might even enjoy it a little bit, you know, when you're not like, I know what it's like to struggle. Boy, do I know what it's like to struggle. And sometimes when you're in the middle of the struggle and you get tunnel vision and it's easy to not see. Like I used to be one of those people, and I'm one of the many things I'm ashamed about in my past is that I was very judgmental against homeless people when they take my money and go buy a beer with it. And I think about it sometimes and I just cringe, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that I to be where I am today and to all the people that I was just like, oh no, or I'll be one of those people that puts my headphones in so I can walk all the way to work and just pretend like I don't notice people. And that's dehumanizing. And it took me a while to learn that, but I have. And so now we have a homeless population in this town. In this little town. And there was a lady at a meeting that I went to of a group called Building Athens Together. And I'm not going to say her name, mostly because I don't remember it. But she talked to my opponent. She mentioned that we had a vagrant problem. And I just thought, you know, why does it have to be a vagrant problem? These people are down on their luck. They're temporarily houseless.
Yep.
But it doesn't make them a second-class citizen. And you know, I took offense to that, and unfortunately I didn't get a chance to jump on it, which I should have, but
yeah, like you said, it's there's a big growing process. I mean, I remember kind of doing a similar thing you know, through my teens and stuff and not really understanding it as well. I grew up in a small town and it was we didn't have like a real city center or anything like that. So I didn't see it nearly as much. So it was when we did like class trips to the cities, and teachers were probably in, you know, good spirit, try to keep the kids safe or whatever, trying to like, don't talk to anyone else. And, you know,
sure.
So it grew from that, I guess. But I've changed obviously over time. And again, you know, I had the same kind of thought just, you know, a couple weeks ago. That was like, you think, you kind of reflect back on some of the places you've been or the thoughts that you've had in the past. And they're definitely cringe, but I think the fact that you can identify that you were at a point previously that is worse than the point you're at today is a super positive thing, because you can see all that growth that you've had in between there. So
absolutely. Well, I mean, just through my 20s, you know, I struggled a lot with depression and anxiety and things like that. And I was just out on my own for the first time. And like, I was raised, you know, like most kids in America, I was taught that, you know, this is a place where you could just be whatever you want to be. And there's no exception to that. You just got to put your mind to it. If you can set your mind to it and grab your bootstraps, you can just build a life for yourself. And as I got out into the world and I realized how much cruelty there is, like it really affected me. It was like the foundation of my entire life was destroyed. And so it took me a decade to rebuild that foundation. And I just ultimately went back to my great grandmother. Was just a beautiful soul, and she was a very kind person. And that's where I learned the value of kindness. And so I had to get back to that. I moved back from the city and started reconnecting with family and just, you know, rediscovering my roots. And there's a whole lot of beauty to it.
Yeah, no, and it's difficult to have kind of some of those rebuilding moments, but it's really therapeutic. You know, I think to be able to reflect on kind of the past and be able to kind of have a phoenix moment or whatever you want to call it, to kind of rebuild yourself from a place you'd like to be. That's wonderful.
Well, I think everybody deserves the opportunity. And with this race, that's sort of been one of the things. Now, granted, my ability to go out and really do campaigning was severely limited by COVID. And between COVID and back pain, I lost a whole lot of time.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's the life of an uninsured man. Not an uninsured motorist, though.
No, and that's I think one of the things that you know, we can kind of dive into a whole nother thing on kind of healthcare and stuff as well. But there's something there, I think, in bringing things back to a community level and trying to be helping each other. You know, folks who know that, you know, in every community, I feel like there's doctor's offices and things like that. And I feel like working within a community and not having it have to go all the way up to the top government levels to then be insured all the way back down through all these different back channels is the right way to go.
Well, it's like a hierarchical Rube Goldberg machine. It's like, oh, hey, let's win this money here. And it's going to come down, knock down the dominoes and then the little ball. Then eventually the mousetrap drops, right?
Right.
Milton Bradley, they had government all figured out, man.
Mousetrap.
Yeah, it's zany action and a crazy contraption. The funds catch it.
That's super true.
I have been murdered by advertising. But really, there's a piece of my soul that is really just like the trademark symbol at this point.
Yeah, I mean, we consume so much of it growing up, especially I feel like our generation, the bulk of like when we were growing up into like the early teenage years, there was just a mass amount of stuff thrown at us with branding and movies and music videos. I mean, everything.
The 90s was a hell of a time to be alive, kids.
Yes.
What a day. What time. Teenage Mutant, Ninja Turtles, all of it. But I'm getting sidetracked.
So speaking of sidetracked, I do owe you a picture of the baby. And yes. I said I would give you one during the show. And my wife, completely unknowing of this, actually snapped a beautiful photo today of my baby and the dog sleeping on her in a post-political podcast shirt.
That's good advertising right there, because I would buy that baby as long as it said post-political podcast on it. Sorry, Rothbard, it was a joke. But She's beautiful. You're so incredibly lucky. That is real wealth. And if anybody in the comments here doubts that, go out and have yourself a pretty baby like that, you know, but responsibly, like That's Derek. Right.
No, and it's been an amazing journey for sure. And it's just, that's one of the reasons I'm taking a little break this summer. And it's one of the things that's helped me kind of reevaluate and really root a lot. I mean, I was rooted, I think, a little bit before, but it really has rooted me in kind of a message and drive of love and compassion and humanity. Like you said, it's got to be better for her. I have to make it better for her.
Well, she's not even my kid, and I want to make it better for her.
And I love that about you, JC. I completely do.
I love kids, man. Ever since I was a kid, I was raised, and it was hard for me living in the city because kids come up and talk to you. And I grew up that if a kid looks at you and goes, ring, ring, you answer the telephone, because kids don't understand things like rejection. And they want to be an adult from the time, you know, that they're a little, like, drooling mess. Yeah. And if you discourage that early on, you know, we're just going to end up with more of the same in the world. And we just can't afford to do that.
No, not at all. It's the care and compassion and stuff starts very early, I feel like. And I think that message needs to be, you know, everywhere, because it does, you know, the whole takes a village thing is so true. Like, your kid's not with you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. They're kind of in and out of schools and in different areas and stuff. You have to make sure you're kind to that next generation and the generation after that to make sure that they grow up kind.
Right. And you want to teach them critical thinking too, because you never want your kid having sex with Matt Gaetz ever. And I'm not talking about your kid, anyone's kid. Your kid's too smart already for Matt Gaetz.
She is. She's learned a ton of stuff now. It's ridiculous. But no, I think this, you know, this message of kind of helping the future and being able to, I think it ties back in nicely to the rest of the campaign that you've run. And just from me seeing the progression of the videos and just different stuff that I've seen you talk about, both posting on the website and actually talking to you physically, is wonderful to kind of loop back into not just this whole direct bureaucracy thing, but getting people back involved with their community. I mean, that's one of the tools you're using to do so, but being able to do so with such a cool message behind it is pretty wonderful. So I wanted to loop all that kind of back together, because I think, you know, it feels like we got sidetracked, and me and you, I think every time we talk, we get sidetracked.
I'm terrible at sidetracking. I get it all
sorted. I think it's all, you know, it's all kind of encompassed into this better future and better community led, I guess, governance of our lives. And I think it's just a wonderful message to back with love and compassion and stuff. So,
Thank you. We're
up against the time that we have. I wanted to kind of throw it to you for one last piece of whatever you want to promote, talk about, and kind of lasting message, I guess, for us. And then we'll say goodnight.
Sure, absolutely. So, you know, when I had this idea, ultimately, I just wanted to give people an option. But as I've gone on, I've begun to understand the value of what the Libertarian Party, people in the Libertarian Party told me for years, down ballot, down ballot, down ballot. That's where it's at. And I didn't believe that until I really started doing this and started thinking about all the things that we can do. And let me tell you, these little towns like this, they are completely unprepared to have an anarchist running. And granted, I haven't gone out and said, oh, I'm an anarchist, but I'm like one search away from, you know, spilling the beans.
Right.
With 10% of the population voting regularly for the mayoral election and city council, it takes 15% of the population organized to take this town and to turn it into something beautiful. And so I'm going to spend the next 4 years, regardless of how this election goes. I've already reached out to a couple of groups. I'm going to be going to their meetings, the group Building Athens Together, which is made up of quite a few people on a generally neglected side of town. And you know what I'm talking about. This town that I live in is separated by a literal set of railroad tracks. they run through the town. And you can tell the side that gets attention from the city and the side that really doesn't.
Right.
And I don't like that. So I'm going to spend the next few years doing outreach and organizing these people. And the next election, I'm running with a slate of city council candidates. And we're going to organize. We're going to get poor working people out to the voting booth. And we're going to change this thing. And hopefully, if it works, I mean, it could function potentially as a blueprint for other cities around this country.
That's great.
The general idea.
That's awesome. No, I think that's super important. I think, you know, I've been a part of a few campaigns now, and I think there's a common theme that pops up in the ones that do well versus the ones that don't do well, you know, at the ballot box. And it's that kind of organization beforehand, that work beforehand to build coalitions. Our good friend Sasha Cohen, you know, he built coalitions with all different folks in the area, different school board members that weren't running as, you know, libertarians or anything. They were just running in his area under similar things that they wanted to accomplish. And they were able to get together and just hand out literature together. I mean, just that one small thing was so important to his campaign.
Absolutely. And Sasha is incredible, by the way. He has been an amazing help with this campaign, really helped me. Because after I filed, boy, I was like, oh, God, what do I do now? And Sasha came with just like equipment and stats and numbers and all these things that, as someone who's never run before, I probably wouldn't have begun to think of. And Tyler Lindsay, special shout out to Tyler and to Dez. They really have helped me with the production of content and with my learning to edit my own videos, which has been incredible. I am truly blessed to have this community of weird vermin supreme loving people that have really helped shape me philosophically.
Oh, that's wonderful. And a lot of them in the comments. Now, Dez, I want to shout out to the folks in the comments. So Dez is in the comments. Liz, Matt, Ari, and Brent. So all of you who have commented, thank you all for joining in the conversation. I have a really hard time. You know, obviously, JC and I jumped off on many different side roads. If I paid attention to every one of the comments, I'd have a lot of that going on in my head beyond just the conversation. So I apologize for not addressing. Oh, and Keith, not addressing every one of them directly, but thank you all for engaging and talking there. And I want to say good night, JC. I thank you so much for coming on. It's been wonderful. I could talk to you for another couple hours here, but thanks for coming on. This was great.
Thank you for having me. And hey, best of luck wrapping up this season. And I look forward to season two, brother.
Thanks, man. Have a great night. So it was JC Cook. If you are anywhere near Athens, Texas, and you know, definitely talk to friends and family that are down in that area. Vote for JC. JC is looking to do some awesome things. Different ideas that I haven't really heard of for a mayor race, and it's just wonderful. It's cool to see people coming at different problems from different directions. And I wish JC the best. Obviously, he's a good friend of mine. But even outside of that, just hearing about the things he wants to accomplish is really awesome. So the next two guests, I'll preview the next two, the last two of the season. So next week, we have Destiny Clayton. She is a Green Party candidate for the governor of Michigan. So she's going to be on next week with us. So she's early on in the campaign. So we're going to talk a little bit about some of the campaign stuff, but more, you know, Green Party in general and some of the stuff that she wants to accomplish. And then the last episode of the season, Aaron Hamlin is the executive director of the Center for Election Science. He's going to be going over approval voting, which I actually don't know a ton about. I know, and I campaigned in Massachusetts for the ranked choice voting, but I know very little about approval voting, and I'm excited to learn a lot more there. So those are the next two Thursdays. So next week is Destiny, Green Party candidate for governor of Michigan. And then the week following that will be Aaron Hamlin, executive director for the Center for Election Science. So tune in, you know, every week. I appreciate everyone that's been, you know, kind of coming in and out of the different shows and watching them before and after. I really appreciate all the support. Like I said, wrapping up season one, I'm very excited for season two. We're going to kick off really strongly. And I hope you enjoyed JC and myself having a great conversation in this week's Post Political Podcast. Have a great night, everybody.